For the Medical Journal of Australia, I'm Kate Swanell. Welcome to the MJA podcast. Just over a year ago, a group of Victorian intensivists, watching what was happening overseas, decided they needed to do something to make treating COVID-19 patients easier and safer. Together with developers from Telstra, Ambulance Victoria and Safer Care Victoria, they developed a tool called the Critical Health Resources Information System, or CRIS. When the second wave of COVID-19 hit Victoria, CRIS gave visibility to ICU resources across the country and allowed patients to be transferred to hospitals where the resources were available to best treat them. Dr. David Pilcher, an intensivist at the Alfred Hospital in Melbourne, was one of the clinicians involved in the development of CRIS. Dave's my special guest today.
Thank you for doing this.
That's all right.
Take me back a year. When you saw what was happening overseas, what was your first thought?
Good question. I think by this time last year, we realised it was real and we were beginning to think this is actually going to affect us properly. Yeah. It started building in January. By January, we were starting to realise that something potentially huge was going to happen. We were looking at what was going on in China. And then by the time that Italy started happening, and then Italy became Germany and the UK and New York and things, and that was just beginning, I guess, this time last year. I suppose there was a sort of mixture of absolute desire to try and do something, a little bit of panic, a bit of not knowing what was going to happen, a bit of thinking that there should be ways to cope with this. But while we were thinking that, we were also looking at what was going on around the rest of the world, and you know, seeing the sort of like horrendous pictures that were coming out of Bergamo in Italy, and people talking about not having enough ventilators and these sort of things that sounded like horror stories, actually.
And did you think it was inevitable it would come?
By this time last year, yeah, we thought it was coming, because what was happening was that what we didn't know was quite how severe it was going to be, because pretty rapidly, as soon as it sort of spread outside of China and was happening in Europe, there was the odd case turning up. You know, there were the Ruby Princess friends and colleagues working in ICUs in WA and in Sydney, and then shortly afterwards here, who were having to deal with patients who were coming in off the boats, off cruise liners, and were literally being taken off the ship and being put into the ICU. As that started happening, even though there were only one or two patients at that stage, it made it real was what it did. And you suddenly thought, well, hang on, if we're seeing one or two patients now, one or two can become a handful, can become lots, can become, you know, an overwhelming sort of wave of patients that potentially crushes the resources that we've got. So we were genuinely worried at that stage.
And is that when the sort of kernel of CRIS began?
Yeah, pretty much, actually. Yeah, because it started off as a sort of conversation about, we were having a conversation and we were talking to, there was a bunch of clinicians talking together, talking to other people involved in the sort of disaster response locally at individual state levels, because intensive care is a small enough community, you all know each other. Yeah, and also having conversations with the Federal Health Department, with the Commonwealth. Someone said something along the lines of, in those hospitals in Italy, surely there would have been somewhere that would have, there wouldn't, every hospital would not have been running out of ventilators. There would have been another hospital down the road that would have had ventilators or could have got staff there. That then became a statement, and we sort of wrote it down in the article about, well, hang on, if you could see a spare ventilator in Sydney, why would you let someone die in WA? But as soon as that was said, there was a moment of, oh, hang on, that's what we need. What we need to do is to have visibility over where all the services are, who's got the capacity. Because it's not going to hit everywhere uniformly. It's going to hit different places at different times. And that was the sort of like the spark of the idea that then generated the whole system. That provided the focus for everyone to start building it and adapt some of the IT systems that existed already around, particularly in Victoria and elsewhere.
Was that difficult to do? Was the software and the hardware even, was that already in existence, or did you have to come up with whole new slabs of code to get this done?
Well, what there was there was already a similar system that was in existence in Victoria.
Right.
And other states have got similar-ish sort of things that help you determine where you need to find an ICU bed, or you can sort of see if the ED is busy or if you need to sort of move somewhere between a different area. So there was something there that could be adapted. And what we did was, there was myself, in particular sort of Jason McClure and Mel Rosenau from ARB and Ambulance Victoria. And they were the people that ran that system, and it was pretty obvious. And I think it might have been actually Mel who was the one that said, well, you could turn something like this into a system that allows you to see the whole country. So that was what we did. And we ended up talking to their developers, who are sort of an IT group that worked with Telstra, talked to them. And Telstra were great. They came to the party, and the guys who were the sort of the coders, they were like, let us know what we can do. And there was a weekend where I was sort of like joining in and out of the meetings that they were doing. But I think they worked constantly through from Friday through to Monday morning, coding, yeah, writing stuff and doing stuff, because they saw the value in it as well. It's probably one of the most amazing experiences that I've had. Everyone was trying to do something.
What does Chris allow you to see?
At its very basic level, it allows you to look at all the hospitals in your region, and you can see how many patients are in your intensive care, how many are on a ventilator, how many spare ventilators that you've got, how many COVID patients, how many need dialysis or other sort of important ICU therapies. Yeah. And also, we also added in the opportunity for sites to tell us how many staff were missing, because we thought that might become a rate limiting step. So when they enter their data, they say, well, we've got all the staff are available today, or we've got 5 staff off or 10 staff off. And it's nothing more than that one number. But that was also something that then was quite, we didn't realize quite how much we'd learn from that, you know, when we came to be affected here later on in the year.
I guess there's no point having a spare ventilator if you don't have the staff to service the bed with the ventilator.
Yeah, absolutely. Really, an ICU bed is really an ICU nurse looking after a patient attached up to machines, of which the ventilator is the most important one.
I'm chatting today with Dave Pilcher, who is chair of the Australian and New Zealand Intensive Care Society's Centre for Outcome and Resource Evaluation. Dave and his colleagues have written about CRIS for the MJA, and you can find it at mja.com.au, where it is open access. If you have any suggestions for us about people you would like us to interview on the podcast, or if you have any other feedback, just drop us a line at cswannell, that's C, S for Sam, WANNELL, at mja.com.au. Next week, my guests will be Professor Henry Wu and Dr. Amy Tay, who will be talking about prostate cancer. Back to our chat with Dave.
And did that become more of a problem than the lack of ventilators?
Yes, it did, actually. It was more of a rate-limiting step than we realised. Having built CRIS, by the time it sort of gets going, the numbers are going up around the rest of the country. And then as CRIS is deployed and everyone starts entering data, the numbers start dropping. And, you know, the numbers in Sydney drop, the numbers in Perth drop, and the numbers here drop. So everyone sort of settles down again. And we have a couple of weeks where we think, oh, okay, great, all right, good. Public health measures have really made a difference. And we're all sort of cautiously waiting for things to happen or maybe start getting back to normal. And then when the numbers started rising again here at the beginning of the winter, CRIS allowed us to see where the issues were. And the problems were in the north and west of Melbourne. And it was the hospitals there that were disproportionately affected. But they were affected not just because of the volume of patients that were turning up. They're affected because, as we said a moment ago, you know, an ICU bed is an ICU bed with a nurse. And people were finding that in their ICUs that they were getting staff off. And they were getting staff off because staff lived in the places where there were coronavirus infections. People were getting exposed to it and had to be furloughed to isolate. And so it limited the ability to actually provide the resources to look after that increased demand. And we could see that in CRIS. At the same time, so CRIS facilitated the response that the clinicians and the sort of the health department and AV and ARV put together to actually respond to that.
Has it spread to other states?
When we implemented it across the whole country.
Oh, great, yeah.
So everywhere went live at the same time. The people in New South Wales did point out the fact that they've already got their hospitals linked up on an electronic system, so we were slightly behind. But yeah, everyone got behind it. We also made it available to New Zealand as well, even though it was being funded by the Australians. We said, like, if New Zealand did get hit by COVID, we would be helping them out and vice versa. So it was made available right the way across. And the compliance across the whole of Australia has been very good, and it's continued. The compliance in Victoria during the period where it was really needed was 100% at the time. So
brilliant. Is it something that's going to now become a part of everyday life in ICU, or is this just a crisis management tool?
That's a really good question. In fact, that's one of the things that we're thinking about. What we've found is it allowed us to respond to the clinical problem. And it allowed us to move patients from those ICUs that were really busy and shift them to ICUs that had greater capacity. And that was great for that acute, let's call it disaster management type scenario. What we've seen since then is it provides us visibility on the whole system of what's happening on a day-to-day practice. And say, for instance, right at the moment, the bigger tertiary hospitals in Melbourne are really, really busy. And you can see that in the system. You can just see it. So it allows a sort of response to normal levels of activity. And you can see where, you can see that, you know, different sites could come under pressure at different times. Different places get busy with different types of patients turning up. So it allows us to use it like that. We're seeing that retrieval agencies around the rest of the country and hospitals that are on borders find it really useful. Tweed Heads are more likely to send patients to Queensland than they are down to Sydney. Yes. For instance, Albury need to know what's going on in Victoria and New South Wales. It facilitates that sort of visibility that didn't exist before. It's also got the capacity to do more than just ICU. So it can be turned. It works for ICU at the moment, but were we to have another, let's say, a thunderstorm asthma event or a major bushfires, it's really very easy to turn on, you know, a component of the system that allows you to look at the number of asthma patients that are turning up.
Wow,
and do it not just for the ICU, but you can do it for the EDs. Or
in theory,
you can do it for, I don't know, other parts of the healthcare sector, even outside of the healthcare sector, potentially. So the capacity of the system to monitor what's going on in the country is very adaptable and can be lifted into a whole different load of different environments.
Wow. Well, that's brilliant. That sounds like it's going to have utility forever and a day. So
there's an ED pilot happening here in Victoria, to happen here in Victoria for exactly that reason, because we're looking at certain hospitals that are having a job with ramping on the and not being able to get people into the EDs. And the flow-on effect is obviously hospitals that are like that have a similar sort of problem with the ICU. So they're all linked. So that's going to happen pretty soon,
terrific,
actually. Probably the only other thing to mention is that, you know, the Chris as an IT system was good, but it was more than Chris. What it was it was Chris facilitated a bunch of people getting together to respond to what was going on. And you had clinicians working with the health department people, working with Safe Care Victoria, working with the retrieval agencies and ARV. And it was that Chris just provided a bit of glue for people to see what was going on. It was that collaboration that really made the difference. And when I was talking to the Chris developers, I said,
yes.
I said to them later on, I said, I think the thing that you created genuinely saved lives because we could see where to move people. But it needs all of those different bits that come together. And it was the clinicians working with the stuff that they built and developed and coded that meant that you could respond in a way that allowed people to turn up in ICUs that weren't under strain and be moved around the state. So it's a combination of those things. And I think it was seen with the, you know, with the aged care sector as well during the peak of the pandemic. It was difficult to see where the demand was, which facilities were coming into problems, where the staffing was. So its applicability to other sectors like aged care, like mental health, and particularly given that there's been a big, in Victoria here, there's been the release of sort of big sort of investigation into mental health.
And the Royal Commission,
absolutely. It's going to be a big focus down here in the sort of forthcoming months. Hopefully it could be part of that kind of stuff.
Dave, thanks for your time. I really appreciate it.
Pleasure. Cheers, Kate.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.